Good morning. So, yes, there has been rumors swirling about Alicia and I's plans. And so we're here to address the biggest rumor of them all. Am I actually growing my hair out? And the answer is yes, because I can. And that was directed at Don Fast, but he's not here this morning, so that's all right. He'll get it when he listens to it. We are traveling to Thailand. Our family is going to relocate to Thailand. And we are here to tell you about it this morning. We got a slideshow for you. I think I'm on. There we go. Alicia and I had a little bit different journeys coming to this conclusion. So we're going to take turns kind of sharing how this whole process came along and just allow you to join us in this new adventure. Yeah, so it all started December 26, 2004. Right here off the coast of this is Sumatra, Indonesia, there was a 9.1 to 9.3 earthquake that happened in the water, and it sent a huge tidal. If you don't know the Richter scale, it only goes up to 10. So that's a massive, massive earthquake. And it sent a tidal wave mainly coming at Thailand, but it went all the way over. This is India over here, okay? And it wreaked destruction that you can't even begin to understand. It was insane how big it was. I was in college at the time, and we were at the Denver Christmas Conference, which was a conference held by Campus Crusade for Christ, which Alicia and I were heavily involved with in college. And the Denver Christmas Conference was just a couple weeks after that tsunami happened. And on the middle night of the Christmas conference, they talk about world missions. And that night, the gentleman by the name of Mike Christian was the Campus Crusade director for all of Thailand. And he was able to travel from northern Thailand, Chiang Mai, all the way down to Phuket. Phuket is a huge, it's an island, but it's a big resort area. It's a big tourist attraction. People who like to go visit Thailand, a lot of them will go to Phuket. And that's where a lot of the damage happened. And Mike traveled all the way down there, and he was on a phone stepping off the bus for the first time, talking to us in Denver, Colorado, describing the destruction that he had seen. He, at this point, I think he had lived in Thailand for 20 years. Let's say 20. He'll probably correct me, but a long time. And he is just verbally trying to describe the destruction. I mean, I can't even put into words the imagery that was going through. It was just a dark auditorium, and all we heard was Mike's voice. There's probably 2,500, 3,000 college students in this room, and Mike's just talking to us. And as I'm sitting there processing this damage, I completely heard God talk to me saying, Rodney, you're going to go to Thailand for spring break, and you're going to help those people. It's like, okay. And I leaned over, had two buddies next to me. I said, hey, do you guys want to go to Thailand for spring break? And they're like, yes, let's do it. And through a course of events, Crusade put together a kind of a relief team. They chose 97 college students from around the United States to travel to Thailand during spring break to provide relief. And this is the morning of me leaving on that project. I'm smiling because I'm excited. Alicia looks tired, but she wasn't as excited as me.
He acts like I was like teeming with anger. I really wasn't. But I was, my response when I found out that he would be going was just a little bit of jealousy maybe, because my story and my connection with Thailand started a long time before that. How do we? When I was a little girl, my very best friend was Alina, and she was Thai. From Thailand, her parents they spoke Thai. They had just moved here. And she came to church with us, and we did all of our holidays together, and we spent the night at each other's houses, like on school nights, like all the time. She went on our family vacations with us. And then she had moved back to Thailand, and we were pen pals for a while. She moved back when we were just in second grade, I think. So I had this connection with the other side of the world, and I'd always wanted to go there. And of all the places in the world that he could go without me, he was going to Thailand. So I had this connection with her. I had this connection with Thailand. She visited us whenever it was that turtlenecks and pink jeans were a thing, and lived with us for a while in high school, kind of an unofficial foreign exchange student thing. So my heart was there, and he was going there, and I was excited for him, but my heart was there too. So although I didn't step foot there then, we both had a connection with Thailand.
So that was a little bit of a flashback, but then this is just a few of the pictures I took when I was there on that spring break trip. This boat is probably 80, 90 feet long. It's a big boat, and it's in 2 miles from shore. It's just, you can't even describe what it was like, the destruction. This is one of my favorite pictures because that's me and a friend just standing there. That's a neighborhood. I am standing on a tile floor. That's someone's living room. There's no homes around. There's probably 15 different homes in that picture. Words I don't have. So then, that was spring break 2005. Alicia and I got married December 2005 during our senior year of college. A couple weeks later, we're at the Denver Christmas Conference 2006. Same auditorium, same group of people. We're there, and on World Mission Night, I hear God talk again. What's different about this night, like I said, Alicia and I had only been married for a couple weeks, but we weren't sitting next to each other. She wasn't feeling super great, so she was kind of towards the back of the auditorium. I'm sitting up with the rest of our friends from college, and I hear God say, "You're going to go back to Thailand, but for longer this time." And I am just going, "What? This is crazy." Because prior to this, I had been given an amazing job opportunity to work for Vail Police Department in Vail, Colorado. It was an amazing, amazing offer. They were going to pay for the academy. They were going to pay me while I was in the academy. They were going to pay for all my housing, all this stuff, to go work in Vail. Like, that sounds pretty awesome. And that's what Alicia and I were planning on, was moving to Colorado after we graduated. But then God says, "I got something different for you." And so remember, we're not sitting next to each other. And I'm just dreading this. I'm like, how do I go tell Lish? Because this is what we're planning on doing. And so after that evening, that World Mission Night, I go and grab Alicia. We go sit in the lobby. There was like this crushed green velvet couches. It was really weird. I remember that. And I sit down and I tell Lish, "All right, I think God's saying that we're supposed to go back to Thailand."
And it was super easy this time around because, let me back up and give you just a bit of context. We were married. We went on our honeymoon. It was wonderful. We came back. It was Christmas. We spent it with family. It was wonderful. Then we go, and I move into what I call the bachelor pad, which is where Rodney still lived with a few fraternity brothers, where we would live together until we were done with college, and tried to clean up the stinky house while Rodney is in bed sick, and I got the taste of in sickness and in health. Then we're at the Denver's Christmas Conference, which is supposed to be a high again because it was a highlight of our year every time we went. Now I'm feeling sick because he gave it to me. So I'm afraid I'm going to miss out on the session, and I'm sitting back by the door in case I have to leave. And while I'm doing this, I was sitting actually like right by the door, like on the floor by the door. And as they were talking about World Mission and all my heartstrings were being tugged, but knowing that Rod like had a really good plan for us and he had no desire to go into ministry or to travel the world or anything, but God is pulling me and had been for as long as I could remember. And I said, "When do I get to go?" And God spoke to me then, and Selah's asked, like, "What does it sound like?" And it wasn't through my ears, it was right into my heart, but it was words, and he said, "My child, wait till I tell Rod, because I will be ready." And it felt like immense comfort, and I thought this was going to be sometime down the road, but then right after the session, he tells me it's now, and I'm like, "Yes, I'm ready, you know, throw all the plans out the window, let's go, let's do this, I'm 100% on board." So we were both there and ready, and I was excited beyond belief to be able to head to Thailand with him at that time in our lives.
That was not the response I was thinking she was going to give me. I was like, oh, she's on board. All right, let's go. So with Campus Crusade, they kind of hired Alicia and I to lead several teams of college students back to Thailand to kind of continue tsunami relief work efforts. So we led kind of a, they called it a stop out. It was like a semester abroad for some college students and a summer project. So a different group of college students came just for summer. And that was different because Crusade really is a college ministry. They go to college campuses and they share the gospel and everything. But we were doing humanitarian relief. So it was a very different avenue from what Crusade normally does. And one of the highlights of what we really got to do is we got to work with the Moken Sea Gypsies. The Moken do not have a nationality. They're a nomadic people group. They're divers. These are the people you've heard of that can, like, dive to the bottom of the ocean, hold their breath for 8 minutes, and pick a clam off the bottom of the floor. Like, these are those people. But they're extremely poor. Very, very poor. And we were able to, through Crusade, buy land on this island and build a village for them. And what was unique about that is because now when their kids are born, they're born on Thai soil, and they become Thai citizens, and they can go to Thai school, and they can get work permits and driver's license. They become recognized as someone. And so we got to build, these were like luxury mansions for them. But we built these homes. Notice they're on stilts because when the tide comes in, you got to use a boat to go from house to house. That was the island we got to work with. So the Moken, we're really close with them. Our hearts are with them. And back on the mainland in a city called Renang, we started the foundations of a children's home that when the kids were able to go to, because there was a school on the island. But when they needed to go to secondary school, high school, stuff like that, they would have to go to the mainland. Well, it's a two-hour boat ride from the island to the mainland. And if the tide is wrong, you don't either go to school or you don't get to come home. Like, that doesn't work. So we started the children's home for kids to be able to be there. They kind of have dorm parents that take care of them so that they can go to school. Then we come home. We moved to Colorado because that was the plan. I was going to go work for Vail PD. That didn't work out, but I got a job with Jefferson County Sheriff's Office, and we started to grow a family. So there's little Josiah, my little patrol buddy, and we're having fun. You know, life's good. I loved my job. I loved being a cop. That was a blast. Then we added Selah to our family, and during this time, Alicia's going to Denver Seminary. She gets her master's in Old Testament. Specializes in Hebrew. Like, things are coming together pretty well for us. And then we come here, and we meet all you folks. We move up to my dad's ranch north of town, and Atkinson becomes home. That was in 2012. We've been here for 10 years. And then July 2015, we travel back to Thailand. We had Jeremiah. Jeremiah's foster mom. She got to take care of him while waiting for us. And then we come back, and our family's growing a little bit more. So Thailand has a special place in our hearts. And then in 2019, with all your help, the entire family becomes world travelers. And we go pick up Tallulah. We get to go to China and go pick her. You! So that was in 2019. Everyone knows 2020. January 2020. We're talking razor's edge before the pandemic starts. Josiah and I get to go back to Thailand, and we go to Renang to continue work on that same children's home. And these kids here, they were all like 4 and 5 years old, 2, 3 years old when Alicia and I were there before. And I brought pictures back and showed them, like, hey, that was you. Like, we got pictures of you when you were a little kid. And Josiah got to go out to the island. So Thailand's always just been a part of our story. But when I came home, I just felt like God was stirring my heart towards Thailand again. This time I didn't know why, and I needed some answers. And so I told you about Mike Christian. Mike's son-in-law, John Fultz, him and his wife, Marisa, they live in Thailand. John's been a missionary kid. He's lived there for like 33 years or something, completely fluent in Thai, still on staff at Crusade. I call him. He was with Josiah and I down in Renang working on the children's home. His son came down. We got to work together. I just said, God's doing something. I don't know what it is, but I think we're supposed to be back in Thailand. He says, what would you do? And I said, I don't know, but I don't want to do college ministry. I don't want to go on campuses. I really have a heart for the Mokhen people because I don't like people being taken advantage of. And the Mokhen get taken advantage of because they don't have a nationality. I said, and then out of my mouth, I really don't know where this came from. I said, you know what? That human trafficking thing, that ticks me off. That really bothers me. And he said, you need to look into Zoe International. It's like, okay. And he says, and I got a good friend who worked with Zoe for a couple years. His name is Kenny. I'm going to give you Kenny's phone number. You give him a call. And so in that time that I'm trying to wrestle through this, because life was going good here. I didn't want to really go move to Thailand, but it felt like that's what we were supposed to do. And that trafficking thing just kept coming back to me. And I stumbled across this documentary called Operation Toussaint. I'm not sure which way you say it. And it's about the Operation Underground Railroad with Tim Ballard. Tim Ballard was, I believe, a DEA agent. He got involved in the combating of child trafficking. And this is like a documentary about one of their raids that they did. And I'm telling you, I watched this movie, and I was bawling my eyes out. It wrecked me. And then I called Kenny, and he was a police officer in San Diego. And I told him, I was like, man, there's something going on. I said, I don't like to cry. Like, I avoid crying at all costs. And I said, man, I was bawling my eyes out. And he said where he got involved with Zoe was he was on an actual call where a child had been trafficked. And he was crying his eyes out on the scene. You don't do that. As a cop, you got to, like, stuff all emotions down. You can go cry somewhere else, but you don't cry there. And I'm like, dude, you get it. You understand. But now I had this problem of I had to go tell someone that I think we're supposed to go to Thailand again. And I didn't know how to really do it.
So Rod's given you a really good overview of the past 15 years of our lives as far as our world travels go. But most of our time was spent in Nebraska, some in Colorado, but here in America, establishing a home. And we'd done the Thailand thing, and my itch was scratched, and I was very content to be home and to build our family here. We bought our first fixer-upper in Colorado about a month before Josiah was born, and then put our own touches on every part of it and did construction and tore pieces apart and put them back together again. And when we had about one bathroom left to go, it was time to move to Nebraska. And we started over. And when we had one bathroom left to go at the ranch house, we moved to town. And we started all over. And we were coming into the home stretch here in town. And I could picture arriving and, you know, just living in a house without tearing it apart. And I was pretty excited for that. And started to maybe hold on a little tighter, to dig my heels in a little bit. And I actually kind of had a silly mantra. Like, we'd finish a project and kind of sit in the room and bask in its glory. And I'd say, oh, I love it so much. Don't make me move. And sometimes it was a little more of a plea, like in my prayers to God, like, I want to just hold the world's circumstances at bay because don't make me move. Don't make me move. And when Rod would have some You know, he's a visionary-minded dreamer. He gets excited about all kinds of things, and he'd come with ideas like renovating an old barn and how cool would it be. And he just wanted to talk about what you could do with the different levels and how what would you do with the loft and what you would do with the window. And that was fun for him. And I'd entertain that a little bit, but mostly be like, Rod, don't make me move. We're not moving. And he'd show me pictures of all these off-the-grid cabins and how cool it was that you could have, like, a composting toilet. And I said, yeah, that's great for them, but don't make me move. And then he'd send a video of, like, these people who would build a house out of shipping containers. You know, isn't that really cool? And don't make me move. Don't make me move. Like I'd said it hundreds of times. So he asked me to watch this movie first. And I didn't for a while. I just let it sit there. Eventually I did, and I knew what my answer would be to anything he was going to say after I watched the movie, Don't Make Me Move. Even as I watched it with my guard up, I saw Rod in it. I did. I knew what was moving him, and I could see behind the documentary the things that he was passionate about and conversations that we had had, and I knew what it was doing to him and what it... just the way that this topic moves both of us with our heart for adoption and kids that need someone to be their voice and to stand up for them in the world. But my answer was still the same at the end of the movie. And we're sitting in our living room, and Rod says, I don't think this is my idea. I think we're supposed to go. And I don't know what else he said, because in that moment, God took me back. And it was like Ezekiel seeing the valley of the dry bones, and it was like Zechariah entering the throne room, and I stood there next to my messenger, and I saw myself sitting on the floor next to the door begging to go. And I remember the comfort that I felt when God said, wait until I tell Rod. And I thought it was in some distant thing, some time down the road, you know, when we were married and had kids and had a home and a family, and I was supposed to wait for God to tell Rod, because he would, and I was to be ready. But 15 years later, in my living room that I loved, it did not feel like comfort. It felt like the bottom was falling out, and I said, no, 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 no. And I was probably looking pretty shell-shocked, but I knew my answer because I'd been practicing it, really, since I was like 9 years old, and I was at the campfire at summer camp, and we sang the song, Here I Am, Lord, and I longed for it, you know, like my chance someday to say, I will go. And so I knew my practiced response. I knew the one that I wanted to have, and I also knew what I'd been saying over and over again, my other practiced response, don't make me move. And in that split second, I was ready to say, yep, we are, we're supposed to go. But instead, what came out was something like, but what are we supposed to do with this life? Like, our businesses. And Rod, with like total peace and calm, says, well, just sell it, walk away. And I was so mad, because it's like he didn't know how like my heart was like wrapped around all those things that we'd been doing, like every investment and every project and all these things. Like, that's my heart all interwoven with that stuff. And if he didn't care about holding my heart together, then I was going to do it. And I said, well, I have a business too, and I'm not just going to leave. That was how it was for like months. A long time, and we talked about things and moving and it and Thailand and trafficking, and I gave him kind of a resigned fine, but I didn't tell him that I knew that we were supposed to go. But am I in today? Like, I am. I'm all in. And I'd love to explain to you what has changed in my heart, and there are so many stories I could tell you. And if we have coffee someday, I would love to. I could tell you the story about how my dance studio, I just held on to it so tight, and with every new COVID complication, I just fought to hold it, and it kept just slipping through my fingers, and I had to finally let it go. And that's God, and that's this story. And I could tell you about how our renovation projects, every little thing I did became like a microcosm for this bigger restoration project that we're called into. Like, I'd be just playing in the dirt and pulling weeds, and I'd be so keenly aware that only God can make the flower grow. But I was so honored to be invited to be a part of the process where I could see the growth that he causes and to actually have my hands in it. And it was such a beautiful invitation. I could tell you more about that story. The story I do want to tell you is about the time that I lost my daughter at the fair. Sorry. You can just do it. Just do it for me. I messed it up. See? Oh, okay. There she is. So that's Selah. At the State Fair in Grand Island, at the Nebraska Wildlife Exhibit. And so I grew up going to the fair. Like, every year we went to the fair, I had my fried cheese on a stick. It was like the thing we did. I think I missed it once when we were in Thailand, but even when we lived in Colorado, like, I made it back for the fair because we did this. I haven't been since that year to get my fried cheese on a stick, but here's how the fair was laid out then. I don't know if it's the same now, if you're aware. Beyond this exhibit, there's this playground, like this hill with lots of slides and a humongous sandbox. It's a pretty spread out area. And then beyond that, there's this amphitheater, so a whole bunch of seats and a stage. And then beyond that, there's like a information booth, and on the back side of that structure are public restrooms. Okay, so in like lots of distance, that's the layout beyond here. So after this, we are playing at the playground, and it's set up so that if the kids climb up on one side of the hill, they can slide down on the other, and you don't see them for a while until they come around to climb up again, or they climb up that side and you see them at the top. So I was there with all my family. My mom was there. My sister-in-law is there. So we kind of station ourselves around the hill, and we're all doing head counts and watching all the kids. And I'm by the sandbox because Janot had been home for about a month or two at this point. He wanted to play in the sand. So that was my spot. So probably around the time that I take this picture of Jeremiah, my mom comes over and she's like, "Have you seen Selah?" And I said, "No." And so I start looking for Selah, and my mom takes over there, and I'm going all around, and I'm looking and looking, and this lady says, "You looking for a little girl, pink bow, little skirt?" And I said, "Yep, yep." And she says, "I don't know, she went with some lady over this way." And so I'm imagining all the things that this lady is going to take her to go do. And my mind's running miles a minute, and I'm headed in that approximate direction, and I'm saying, "Little girl, pink bow, little skirt, this tall." And another person saw her, and they said, "I think they went over towards the bathrooms." So I told you the layout, right? This is a long ways. This is a long ways. And I'm following after where maybe she's going. And I go in the bathroom, and I'm looking for all the little feet under the stall, and I'm just kind of imagining what might be happening and what I might say, and should I knock down the door? Should I make a scene? Should I start yelling? Do I need to call her name? And then Selah comes out, and I look in her eyes, and all is well. And I took her, and I left, and I don't even know what that lady looks like. I don't know if she was being helpful. I don't know if I should have yelled at her. I don't know. And I took my daughter, and the rest of the world was spinning. And in those few minutes, I know that I've made eye contact with some moms in this room, and I know that your mind can go where my mind went. And here's the thing. People live that nightmare, like, for real. Every day, millions of them. And sometimes it's not that they're just snatched up. Sometimes they're like a part of their children entering this nightmare world. And the desperation, that's a nightmare too. My nightmare didn't come true, but it does for so many. And so now, from where I stand with God working in my heart and changing my mind to the way that I see my world and my life and all that is important to me and all that I've been working toward, is I'm in. Here I am. I will go. I will hold your people in my heart.
All right. So I could transition into just some basic information. This is the official definition of human trafficking. It's really wordy because probably a lawyer wrote it. It is the recruitment, transportation, transfer, harboring, or receipt of a person by means of a threat of use of force or other forms of coercion or abduction, of fraud, of deception, of the abuse of power, or of a position of vulnerability, or the giving or receiving of payments or benefits to achieve the consent of a person having control over another person for the purpose of exploitation. Yes, a lawyer wrote that. Exploitation includes sexual exploitation, forced labor or services, servitude, or the removal of our organs. Basically, human trafficking is modern-day slavery. So I did some math for you guys. Human trafficking is believed to be the world's fastest-growing criminal enterprise. It is estimated $150 billion a year global industry. Of the 190 countries ranked worldwide by gross domestic product at $150 billion, if it was a country, it would be the 56th largest country. That's the top 30%. It's estimated that 40.3 million people are trafficked annually. So what's 40.3 million? This is kind of hard to see. It's the entire metropolitan area of LA, Chicago, and New York City. But even there, out here, it doesn't really cognitively make sense how big that is. So I did this. It's the population of all those states. So every single person you know who resides in one of those states, that represents one person who's trafficked. So why does Thailand seem to be so connected with human trafficking? Due to its regional location, economic realities, and the natural tourism attractions, Thailand functions as a major transit, origin, and destination zone for human trafficking. Those three terms are official terms. So back to the map. Okay, because you have some pretty rough countries around Thailand, you got Burma, you've got Laos, you've got Cambodia, you've got China, you got Vietnam, Thailand's really kind of a free beacon. People don't really live, they're not taken advantage of, and I know that sounds crazy in the way that I'm talking, but they're not oppressed governmentally like they are in those other countries. So you get a lot of those people, like Burma has the world's longest civil war. They've been at war since World War II. It's still going on. More unexploded landmines in Burma than there is anywhere else on Earth. All those people like to flee to Thailand. Laos, Cambodia, same story. Well, now they're illegal immigrants. If they go to the cops, they go to the government for help, what happens? They get sent back to where they just fled from, right? And so this is what they call an origin part because traffickers can take those people, children, and they can take them other places. It originates in Thailand. It's also a destination spot because most people know Thailand's a super beautiful country with all its white sandy beaches and natural resources and all that stuff. So a lot of people vacation to Thailand. It's huge. Tourism is a massive part of their economy. So because they have all these other people coming in, it's a destination spot for trafficking. And then just by the way of where it's located geographically, it connects kind of the Pacific Ocean with the Indian Ocean. People can be transported across transit very easily. So Thailand has a lot of things kind of working against it, and that's why it makes it such a big deal for human trafficking. It's estimated, this was something I learned when I was just there, it's estimated that global one child trafficked globally will cost traffickers roughly $10,000. Traffickers will recover that cost in 1 week through exploitation. Do the math, $500,000 per child annually. So this is where Zoe comes in. And Zoe's mission is simple. Reach every person with the gospel. Rescue every child. How does Zoe do this? Through prevention, rescue, and restoration. We like to all think about rescue. That's the kind of the exciting thing. We love the idea of the good guys coming, punishing the bad guys, rescuing the kids. But when you think about it, if a child needs to be rescued, the damage has already been done. The trauma already exists. So Zoe puts heavy emphasis on prevention. And so being able to talk to folks about how are children trafficked, what makes them susceptible to trafficking. COVID made things worse because beforehand, if you were on certain streets in Thailand, someone might approach you with a three-ring binder of pictures of children and you just chose who you wanted. It's kind of crazy to think about. Now, because of COVID, kids couldn't go out anywhere, so what they hopped online. And so now trafficking is done via social media through online exploits, and it's a whole lot harder to detect. So being able to go talk to children about how this is done is a way to prevent it from ever happening. It's also letting parents know how kids are trafficked. Sometimes it is the snatch and grab that Alicia was worried about. Other times it's just luring away. It's a child who feels like she's not wanted, and so there's the guy that says, hey, I'll make all your dreams come true. Other times it's really deceitful, but it seems honest. A guy says, hey, I got a whole string of hotels in Bangkok. I'm looking for some people to help do the laundry services, help clean rooms. And the parents say, that's a much better opportunity than we got here. Yeah, go with them. And so the parents think that everything's good, and really it's not. And then you have the horrible situation of parents actually selling their kids. So being able to go into these communities, identifying who are at most risk, and trying to stop it before it starts, that's prevention. Rescue is exactly what you think. Zoe does something really cool that I admire greatly. Zoe never seeks its own glory, ever. If there's ever a rescue done, Zoe gives the credit to someone else. And the number one group that they work with is the Thai government. And this works both ways, because the Thai government wants to be recognized as combating this problem. It looks good from like the UN perspective that they're actively trying to combat this. This doesn't look good globally to be known for trafficking. So Zoe says, we're going to work with you and we're going to give you all the credit. So the government knows, hey, we're going to get all the accolades. So who do they want to work with? Zoe. So it works both ways. Zoe gets to accomplish their mission. The Thai government gets to do theirs. But what I think Zoe is best at is restoration and helping these kids get back on their feet. So after they've had the trauma, they help them get back to school, learn new skills, depending on the age of the kid, the competency of the kid, figuring out what's best for them. Does this child really have an aptitude towards sewing? Well, textiles are huge in Thailand. Probably most of the fabric you all are wearing was made in Thailand. Well, if that child really is interested in it, let's get them some training in there. Then they can go out and get a job. Maybe they have an interest in hospitality. Maybe it's in cooking. And so these are some different things that Zoe does to help. But we wanted to show you a video that Zoe put together. This is a true story, and just watch it, and we'll pick up after it's over. It's a true story. And that's just one of hundreds that Zoe's been a part of. The little bit you saw there at the end, that is the children's home. That's where we'll be working. And those real kids, are at Zoe. So this is where you all come in. GoZoe.org/Kaim. It's going to take you to that page with that family and that story. At the bottom of it is donations. And you all get to choose how to be a part of it. You can give one time, you can give monthly, you can give quarterly, annually, however you'd like, whatever God's leading you to do. There's even a section to do it through your business. And for us to be able to get over there, we need to raise $57,000. Plus, we'd like, our goal is to have 130 people giving $50 a month. That'll allow us to be fully funded while we're over there. All donations given to Zoe are tax deductible. Zoe's a nonprofit organization. They can't just hire us. It's our job to raise money for Zoe, for them to keep doing what they're doing, helping rescue these kids, sharing the gospel, getting them back on their feet with the entire mission of ending this industry. And the last thing we'd like to ask you is, if you know anyone else who wants to combat child trafficking, we've got a paper back there, fill out, give us their names. We'd love to talk to them about it. I can't even begin to tell you how much I hate that this is an industry, but it's so wildly prevalent. We've got to do something about it. And most of you know me, I can talk a good game. Right now, I'm getting involved, and we're asking you to be a part of that and help us help Zoe stop this thing. So again, gozoe.org/kime.
My thought as I watched that video is that that is some mother's daughter. And every child is some mother's daughter, some mother's son, and a child of God. And we are the family of God, which means they're our children. And I guess I just feel like God's looking for the lost child, just like I was on that day, in that story that I shared. And I think he's inviting all of us in one way or another to go find.